if you start to reply or retweet it, it says, do you want to read the article first?
Yes.
Which I like. It doesn't apparently stop anyone from commenting.
A weekly pulse on all things green and gold with the three-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year, the very animated Jason Wilde. I'm ESPN Wisconsin's Alex Strofe with you. The Green Bay Packers are in first place of the NFC North at 3-1-1 after a victory over the Cincinnati Bengals, and they hit the road, Jack, for the first time after their bye week this week, going to Arizona to take on the Cardinals, though they don't know who they're going to play at quarterback. But the Packers, while the wins haven't always been pretty, they've been wins with a win over Cincinnati last Sunday. Hi, Jason. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I didn't like that at all.
Sorry. What's going on? How are we doing?
We're good. We're good. Interesting one this weekend as the Packers head to Arizona. I feel like we're at a space in the NFL, and I've said this a few times this week, where we just don't really have a clear-cut top dog. Feels like there's a lot of good teams, and we don't really know who's great yet. Packers are clearly in that category of 3-1-1. But it kind of feels like anybody can beat anybody right now in the NFL. It feels like parity is extra large this year.
Yeah, I mean, look, I would look at this game as a game against the team that's lost four in a row by a combined total of 9 points, 2 1-point losses, a 3-point loss, and last week a 4-point loss with their backup quarterback. You know, they're not god awful. This is not a terrible team they're facing. I know when we hear Arizona Cardinals, for many of the last few decades, we've thought, oh, these guys aren't very good. But this is the kind of game that, again, I don't care how you win it. This is the kind of game that if you are the team you think you are, you will go on the road and find a way to win. And it may be ugly. It may be close. But you're right. They're a first place team at 3-1-1. And the reason why that's interesting is because, you know, it's like the old, this is way too old of a reference for you, but it's the old Hot for Teacher song by Van Halen.
Oh, that's one of my favorite.
I don't feel tardy.
It's my favorite, one of my favorite songs of all time.
Nice. Well, I don't feel tardy. I don't feel like a first place team, but they are one. Which is, you know, look, they got a lot of things to fix. They've got a lot of work to do. You're right about the parity throughout the league. You know, it's kind of nice, though, because you don't have you're not facing pitchers who have their contracts. They get paid more, just the four of them, than your entire team does. So that's the beauty of the NFL. But, again, if you are the team you think you are, these are the types of games you go out and find a way to win.
Shortly after the death of Eddie Van Halen, I programmed a 24-hour tribute to Van Halen, the band, on Stevens Point's radio station, WWSP.
Wow!
Little did you know. Little did you know.
Can you do that David Lee Roth split jump that he would do on stage?
I'm not going to attempt it right now, but maybe I'll put it at the end of the video once I attempt it. But I don't think I have ample space back here.
Well, I'll say this. You're willing to do anything that'll make you look stupid. I respect that about you.
I'm doing a donut eating contest with Wally Lukaczynski later today. So, yeah, right up there. Yeah.
What kind of donuts?
I don't know. I don't know what we're getting into over at the Zizzo Group here in Milwaukee. So that's a story for neither here nor there. So let's get back to
Well, I like donuts.
Come on down. Can you make it by 11:40?
I have a question I have to ask Jeff Hafley on behalf of Gabe Neitzel, so I can't miss availability.
Well, I guess while we're on that topic, what's that question?
Gabe would like to know why there's been so much cushion being given to receivers the last two games, when that wasn't really the case early on. So that's the distilled version. I said I'd like a very specific, very clear question, so I don't look like an idiot. I can't get my NFL Plus to work, so I haven't watched back the game from Sunday.
Okay. I guess what he's referring to is maybe on like a 3rd and 4 situation where cornerbacks are lined up, let's say 8 yards behind the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
Same situation. Okay. It's a fair question. I'm curious
Right.
what his answer would be on that. And
So am
obviously,
I.
a couple of good receivers on this Arizona team. But what were your takeaways against the best 1-2 punch in the league, Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins? Kind of quiet days for both of those guys, despite a really impressive touchdown catch for Ja'Marr Chase in the 9-point victory on Sunday.
Yeah, that's what special looks like, right? He had no bit, a mere mortal does not catch that touchdown pass. But that's how good Ja'Marr Chase is. And look, I thought the Joe Flacco saga was fascinating and fun and different, and but he ain't Joe Burrow. I don't know what it's like to be a Cincinnati Bengals fan. I assume most of the time it's frustrating. They did go to a Super Bowl not that long ago under Zach Taylor with Joe Burrow at quarterback. But
True.
man, you got to be looking at your team going, if we just had our quarterback, we'd be in pretty good shape. Instead, they don't, so they're not. But again, this is why our little fruitless exercise of going through the schedule, oh, win, loss, win, loss. I don't know, we probably would have said they're going to beat the Bengals because they're playing at home at the start of the when the schedule was released in May. But it's not who you play, it's when you play them. Had they played them in the opener, maybe they don't win, right? Bengals started out 2-0, and then obviously Burrow gets hurt in that second game. There were a lot of people that were looking for more style points from that game. And I'm going to go back to what I said about this Arizona game. Just survive in advance, man. And then we can start talking about style points and how they're playing when we get to December and January. And are they playing at a level that makes you confident that they are going to be a Super Bowl contender? That's when I'm worried about the aesthetics, because that's when you get a feel for, are they good enough against the league's best teams to win? But they ain't playing the league's best teams. They didn't play them last week. They ain't playing one this week. That's why, again, I don't care if it's, 7-2, which would be, I don't know if that's a scoregami or not, you scoregami nerd. But I shouldn't matter. We'll pick if that's the fine. Let's live in the world of the hypothetical realm. Packers win 7-2 on Sunday. Maybe the Brewers win by that same score.
Fingers crossed, yeah.
And we're we could sit and criticize how the offense couldn't get anything going, but the defense finally played great. They didn't allow, they allowed a there was a safety earlier in the game. They pitched a shutout the fourth quarter after giving up 63 points in the last five games, didn't give up a point, and we're talking about, hey, all right, it was ugly, and now what's wrong with the offense? But they won. And so, at the end of the year, they tally up all your wins, and then they decide where you are in the playoff pecking order. They don't say, oh, well, this one's not worth as much because they won 7-2 in Arizona. So I don't know what Sunday's going to look like. I don't know if Jonathan Gannon is going to, beat up one of his own players again,
I knew that was coming eventually. Yep.
but just go out there and get a W.
Yeah, Packers are 6.5-point favorites in Arizona. Aside from this matchup, the Packers have now played five games. Just, I'm gonna ask this as flat out, take it whatever direction you want. What do you know about the Green Bay Packers through five games?
Yeah, they're inconsistent, right? Their quarterback has played extremely well, with the very notable exception of some plays. We talk about this, I feel like, every week.
I think we do, yeah.
And he had another one in that game. Now, it was early in the game, but they are in the red zone. And again, for all the Jordan Love apologists, Jordan Love himself flat out saying, look, I got to be smarter there. I'm out of the pocket. I just Zach Tom had a great catch on the sideline of a ball that was thrown away. Go find, you've got Zach Tom on the field, so find the defensive Zach Tom and put it in Nasir Stackhouse's chest on the sideline. And then go get 3 points on a field goal from Lucas Haversick. Like, don't do that. And he knows that. And again, it doesn't matter. They won anyway. But it matters if you're playing a nip and tuck playoff game on the road at Detroit, and suddenly you know, instead of going up 3-0, you throw that pick, and then they go down and score, and now you're down 7-0 after you got the opening kickoff. They're going to get the ball at the same. Like, those are the kinds of mistakes that can be the difference in a very close game where if you lose, your season is over. But otherwise, like, he's throwing the ball great. I mean, everybody's talking about the catch that Golden makes down the sideline, and rightfully so. But the throw is pinpoint. Like, he put it where only his guy could get it. Like, it was a great throw. He's running more. I wrote about that today on Channel 3000. Like, you know, and I wrote earlier in the year about the angry runs thing, and I talked to Kyle Brandt about it. Like, that's, you know, does that make me nervous? And more importantly, does it make Matt LaFleur nervous? Absolutely. Did he slide earlier than he probably should have if he's trying to get that first down late in the game? Yes, but I think I'd rather have him slide early and settle for a field goal than have him get his head knocked off by an on-rushing linebacker who is clearly closing on him. So I don't have a lot of things to criticize him for when you criticize him for specific things that makes you a negative Nelly when it comes to the quarterback. But I think he's played really well. And I don't think he's going to win the MVP. He's got to play at a higher level than this, and he's got to put the team on his back more often. But Josh Jacobs got going. Like, there's a lot to feel good about with this team right now.
Yeah, something that I think flew under the radar quite a bit on Sunday was the fact that the offensive line wasn't penalized, which I think has to be the first time all season that happened. The other part of the offensive line that maybe flew under the radar a little bit, and obviously, you know, doing the jobs we have, the Milwaukee Brewers have been the center of a lot of conversation this week. But Jordan Morgan played most of the game at right guard, and it looks like that seems to be maybe their preferred five going forward, because the three injured guys all played the entire game in Rashid Walker, Zach Tom, and Aaron Banks, which is great to see, especially from the Banks front, given how much money you paid for him in free agency. But it seems like Jordan Morgan could be their answer going forward at right guard. What did you make of the offensive line? And obviously, a two thumbs up for me on the no penalized or no penalties for the offensive line on Sunday.
Yeah, I'll be honest, it flew so far under the radar that I didn't even think about that. I was more focused on the fact that Zach Tom, after the game, was saying that he was in such pain that he couldn't remember what happened in a lot of the game. And usually he remembers everything. I talked to him yesterday. And I know we're on YouTube, so I could swear, but I know it also goes on ESPN Beaver Dam, so I won't. But I asked a very succinct question, which was, if you were in that much pain after one game, how the F are you going to play 12 more of these in 12 weeks? To which he replied, yeah, I got to figure it out. I don't know, but I got to figure it out. He also said, speaking of profanity, that he played like Poopy in his return to the lineup. And he said he felt like he was out of shape because he hadn't been running. He felt like his technique was poor. So for him to not get a penalty, he did give up two pressures on three-man rushes, which is like a cardinal sin as an offensive lineman. But he was out there. He played all 61 snaps. That's, you know, he gutted it out. Now, can he do that again, and can they gradually decrease the number of, you know, the amount of pain he's feeling? He would not say it. He would not say the words, but he's clearly getting some sort of pain-killing injection. You know, we have a plan for reducing the pain. I'm not going to tell you what it is. That sounds like an injection to me. I'm not going to tell you what that is. So, but again, I don't think people, like, these guys get paid a ridiculous amount of money, more than you and I could fathom having. Like, him signing an $88 million contract, like, us normal folks, that's insane, right?
Yep.
But they are paid commensurate with what the league generates in revenue. And a lot of times they play through stuff that I wouldn't walk to the grocery store if I was dealing with. And they're ramming into dudes that are 300 pounds. So, you know, he's got to play better. And as he said, when I'm out there, doesn't matter what I'm dealing with. But their offensive line had a solid game. Their protection was leaky at times. But I think, again, and I said this to Homer and John Anderson the other night, I think the arrow is pointing up at a fairly steep angle right now for their offense. Now watch, they'll go out and score 7 points in a 7-2 win, and then I'll look stupid. But I feel good about where they're at.
If they win 7-2, I don't think you'll look anything near stupid, in fact, given how many times you've used that as a hypothetical score today. You'll look like a freaking genius.
They can't give up that 2-run home run in the eighth.
Right.
Cosmetically, yep.
To Amari DeMarcado, exactly. Defensively, seems fine. Still haven't forced that elusive fumble for a team that talked about the ball king all offseason. I know that's something we've talked about before. We'll talk about the defense as a whole in a moment, but I've seen a lot of commentary around Micah Parsons and the fact that he's being held and it's not being called, and he hasn't been as destructive, maybe the word I'm looking for, as maybe we anticipated.
Good word. It's a good word. I like that word.
So what are you seeing from the Micah Parsons front?
Yeah, I think he's been destructive-ish.
Sure.
Like, one of the most interesting things I heard from LaFleur, so, and I know I told this story, I think I was telling KBN as well. You know, years ago, McCarthy brought in it was kind of shaped like the Believe sign here, except it was even longer. And all it had was in the middle a timer at 0.0. And if it got up to 2.5 or beyond, that means the quarterback held the ball too long. Like, that's your target, is 2.5 seconds. Anything beyond that, you're extending the play, you're taking some risk, which, of course, he did it when he had Aaron Rodgers as his quarterback. So there was a fair amount of times when the clock struck 4 or 5 or 6. But Matt LaFleur said that they clocked it from Joe Flacco, and it was more like 2 seconds flat. Okay. Now, again, is a half second in the realm? I mean, think about how many half seconds it requires me to finish a thought. I mean, hundreds. But when it comes to the difference between a sack fumble and just a pressure and the guy getting it out before you get home, that's forever. That's an eternity,
right?
Difference. And so, you know, Micah Parsons has a ton of pressures, but teams, you know, let's give other teams a little bit of credit. Hey, they've got one of the best pass rushers in the league. We should chip and thump and double team him. And then we should probably get the ball out quickly so he doesn't wreck the game. Like, this is now the next step in the evolution of the Micah Parsons project with the Green Bay Packers. How do we get him more productive now that everybody knows that we got him and everybody's seen what he does? Now, on the flip side, I would argue in the last two games, there has not been enough of the Micah Parsons tidal wave lifting all the other boats. And that's on the boats. Like, that's their fault. You know, I mean, Rashawn Gary after 3 games had 4.5 sacks. Now the last 2 games, he has been a non-factor. Mm-hmm. They need him to do more, and he knows that. Like, I'm not saying anything that he doesn't know, but how do you do that? Like, you gotta get more guys, and this idea that losing Devontae Wyatt is the reason, like, are you better with Devontae Wyatt on the field pushing the pocket back and collapsing the pocket? Of course you are. Should that be the reason why suddenly now your pass rush has been less than productive? No, it should not.
Correct. I agree with that wholeheartedly. What do we make of the cornerbacks thus far? Obviously a rough game in Dallas for just about everybody on the list. Better game against Cincinnati. Obviously, we mentioned the Jamar Chase catch was just, I mean, that's generational talent at work. But what do you make of the cornerbacks through five games?
Yeah, they got to be better too. But, you know, here's the problem. If we're going to sit here and say, well, the cornerbacks are getting the ball out fast, well, then we can't use the excuse that if they're not getting pressure, these guys are having to cover longer and they aren't good enough to cover because the pressure's not getting there. Like, which is it, right? And I haven't done a deep dive into this, but Nate Hobbs needs to be better for starters, right? Like, you know, again, whether it's fair or not, expectations come with being a free agent pickup that you paid good money to. Whether you're Aaron Banks and Nate Hobbs, whether you're Adrian Amos and Billy Turner, or whether you're Xavier McKinney and Josh Jacobs, who were grand slam, home run, walk off, you know, bombs that left the stadium. Like, those were great. The other two guys to this point, not in that class. But, like, I don't know. I don't know what Aaron – I haven't looked at Pro Football Focus. I don't know what Aaron Banks' grade was from Sunday. But, again, another guy who hadn't finished a game yet this season. And at least he played. And if they can get those five guys healthy enough to play every week together and they rotate poor Sean Ryan, who they've been trying to replace on a weekly basis for the last three-plus years – then they're going to get better. And by the end of the season, maybe they're a really cohesive unit that really gives them a lot of lanes to run through. And by the way, you know, I was talking to Christian Watson yesterday, and Christian Watson and Matthew Golden at the same time with that speed.
Fire me up.
And what team in its right mind is going to play single high safety? So you get those guys out there, and now suddenly you should have because they, you know, they played a lot of two shell with man coverage underneath for Cincinnati over the last week. That's one of the reasons why they ran the ball well. Like early in the season, they were putting everybody and their brother in the box, and that made it a lot harder.
I'm not sure how a question about the cornerbacks led us to commentary on the offense, but we got there somehow. Defensively,
professional program.
Yeah, that's us. Defensively tied for 18th in sacks, 31st in turnovers.
Yeah, and they'd be last if it weren't for the Jets, right?
That's correct. The Jets only have one turnover.
God bless the Jets.
God bless the Jets. Yeah, telling Aaron Rodgers to kick rocks, certainly a decision by the New York Jets. Let's go back to the offense real quick. I know we only have a few minutes left. Christian Watson, you mentioned, should we anticipate seeing him in Arizona?
In my humble opinion, no.
Okay.
So I was talking to him yesterday. Let me see if I can find the quote here expeditiously. So I was thinking kind of the same thing, right? Like, well, he got a week of practice, and I think it was only individual drills last week. And then, you know, he did some team, I think, yesterday. But here's the quote. You know, he's talking about how excited he is to play. He can't wait to play. At the same time, obviously, the first conversation we had thinking about when to come back was just to do it the right way. I think it would help to be able to stack multiple weeks of practice. Multiple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Not just 2 weeks, multiple mm-hmm. weeks.
Multiple.
I've got an idea of how I'm feeling in my head, but at the same time, I'm just relaying everything to the training staff, the doctors, and really leaving it up to them. So that sounds to me like a guy's not playing this week.
Yeah, that sounds like a guy's still building not playing. Up. I agree. Which allows another opportunity for Matthew Golden to break out. He has his first 100-yard all-purpose game last Sunday against Cincinnati. He has been really good. I think we were at a point where hopefully Matt LaFleur begins treating him as such and game plans to get the ball in his hands because he is shifty, he is quick, and when the ball is in his hands, he seems like he can do a lot of damage.
You guys got a lot in common.
Yeah, that's us.
No, look, I'm always fascinated by folks on social media that, and I've noticed Twitter even has a feature now. Thank you, Elon. You're doing a great job with that platform. Where it says, like, if you start to reply or retweet it, it says, "Do you want to read the article first?"
Yes.
Which I like. People, it doesn't apparently stop anyone from commenting. Why would we want LaFleur to get Golden more involved? It's working that they spread it around. Okay, I'm not suggesting that you use him like Davante Adams when the next best wide receiver was, no offense, Alan Lazard, right? That's not like Jordy and Randall Cobb at the same time or the 2011 group. But like three more plays a game where he's the first read and maybe he gets the ball one out of those three. Like I think what we saw on Sunday, you kind of want to make sure that you're getting the ball in his hands. And look, they've gone to him in the most critical situations. The fourth down to keep the field goal tie forcing field goal in play, who they go to on fourth and six from their own 24-yard line? The rookie first-round pick. Love is moving to his left and throws off balance. Who did he go to get them in field goal range? The rookie first-round pick. So, like, he is different, right? Like, he's – you watch him. He ain't Samari Toure, who's a very nice guy, right?
That was unexpected, yeah.
Like, he's different. And so I don't think it's unreasonable to say, look, I get what Matt LaFleur does. He should keep doing what he does. I'm not in any way pushing for them to change that aspect of what they do offensively. But him and Tucker Kraft right now, based on who they have, him and Tucker Kraft are the two guys that I want to get the ball to, even more than Romeo Doubs. I want to get the ball to Romeo Doubs on third and five, and I want to get the ball to Romeo Doubs in the red zone. But when I'm between the 20s and I want to get the offense humming, I want to go to zero and I want to go to 85. That's
I love
me.
That. Yeah, but I totally agree with you. Those are clearly the two guys that should be his go-to guys in those scenarios. And Doubs has proven his worth in the red zone. He's proven his worth on third down. He's proven his worth as the security blanket.
Yeah, he's an important piece. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I think there's a chance that Golden could be really special.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
I'm not saying throw him the ball 15 times in a game. I'm saying have a couple plays where he's the first read and that maybe gets him the ball one or two more times.
Naturally, as we approach the trade deadline, a lot of rumors swirling. I don't anticipate the Packers trading out to anybody. Kingsley Enagbare is a name that's popped up. Romeo Doubs is a name that's popped up. You don't anticipate them trading any of those guys, right?
So I saw – did someone of actual, like, renown suggest that they've been getting calls on Rashawn Gary? Tausch sent me like a tweet from somebody, but I don't know.
I saw it from Underdog, the Underdog fantasy account. So I don't know what to make of that, but yes, I did see that as well.
Like again, there's part of me.
But here's the thing, Jason. There's a difference between receiving a call and actually fielding calls.
Right, but if you receive a call and you get an offer that gets you, say, a second round pick. You've traded away your first-round picks each of the next 2 years. You don't think Goody wants to accumulate more picks?
Of course he does.
Also, do you think that maybe after paying Micah Parsons, he wouldn't mind getting Rashawn Gary's contract off his books?
I'm not saying that's not possible. I guess I'm more in the camp of why would you mess with something that's working?
Correct. And what I would say is if you kind of circling back to what we were saying at the beginning of the show, you know, if you are the team you think you are, you go into Arizona and find a way to win. If you are the team that you think you are, you keep the band together.
Yep.
I mean, you don't trade Josh Hader at the trade deadline. Now, I'm not saying that Rashawn Gary is the equivalent of that, but he's, you know, I'm sorry that he hasn't had a sack in the last two games, but he's probably a important piece. And you don't get better by trading away good players for draft picks in the future. But again, I wouldn't rule it out. Like I certainly wouldn't be so dismissive to say, well, that ain't going to happen. So I think it's unlikely. And if I'm Enagbare though, like Enagbare is one of the guys whose opportunities have been curtailed because of the acquisition of Micah Parsons. And he's had some pretty damn good moments the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
So that one would not surprise me. And frankly, if I'm him, that's something that I might be interested in. being traded to a team where I'm going to get more opportunity. I think he's in the last year of his deal, though, so then that would be like a rental acquisition.
It would be, yeah. It would be. Yeah, so we'll see. But that's not for a couple weeks, but I'm sure we'll talk more about that next week. Are you going to Pittsburgh next week?
I'm not.
Oh, I was hoping you were.
There's a lot of people with a lot of things on their plate, and I have not, like, really discussed it with the people that would make those types of decisions.
Sure.
So, you know, that's okay. Here's the thing that I would be really irritated about. Like, I make that trip, and, you know, Rogers sees me, and we chat, and we catch up, and I get a bro hug. But I don't get, like, a one-on-one interview, and then I'm just pissed off. Like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't have time. Well, okay, I traveled all the way here to talk to you. So the girl's got stuff going on I'd rather be at.
All right, fair enough. Packers Cardinals coming up Sunday. We'll talk about it more in the 1 o'clock hour of Green Bay Game Day on Sunday. Jason, appreciate the time as always.
I appreciate you, Alex Strofe. I do. Thanks for getting up early.
I'm going to cut that and use it as a hotkey from this point forward. Thanks, Jason. Bye.
You're welcome, Alex. Bye.